Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Dr. Kino's Film Emporium. My name is Toby Reynolds, and this week we have not one, but two interviewees. Yes, fresh from their podcasting labours, we have the Panic Pixies coming down the road. In fact, they're flying down the road on their black lacy gossamer wings, looking very elegant. Holly and Becky, fantastic. Oh, yep, here they come into the Emporium now. Hello, Holly. Hello, Becky. Oh, how are you?
Hello.
Hello. This is a lovely shop that you have that is real.
Thank you. Thank you. It's slightly dusty, but yes, you're very, very kind to say so. So, you have an interesting looking film under your arm, but let's get you settled in. So I've pulled another of the elegant leather wingback chairs out of the cellar, giving it a dusting down. And yes, we're set up for a little bit of a chat. So please take off your wings and have a seat.
Thank you for having us. It's very exciting.
Yes, very exciting.
You're most welcome. It's exciting. It's exciting to have two people to interview as well. So yeah, let's get going. Holly, Becky. So just before we really start, now for some of the listeners who don't, you've got a fantastic title for your podcast, which is The Panic Pixie Screen Girls. Mm. Now, this, for those in the know, this is a pun. For those yes. that don't know, would you be able to explain the pun?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think Holly should explain it because she loves a pun.
I do.
too much, some would say.
Oh. I mean, no, I've got all sorts of feelings. But to the task at hand, it is a pun on Panic Pixie Dream Girl, which is an indie movie trope with, no, Manic Pixie.
Manic Pixie Scream Girl
Say, Clementine in Turn or Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, or, you know, kind of very manic and exciting.
Anything with Zoe kind of Deschanel.
Delightful indie girl who bewitches the hero.
I was going to say, yeah, 500 Days of Summer, isn't it?
That's
the sort of classic. And that's been kind of roundly ridiculed, I think, in Saturday Night Live, amongst other programmes, isn't it, with a quirky girl. Have you seen that?
No, that sounds great.
No, okay. Oh, it's one. It's great. No, there's a fantastic turn by Kristen Wiig as Drew Barrymore, who gets invited to Quirky Girls thing. Michael Cera is there as well. He's played by, I think, Fred Armisen. Oh. Bjork turns up as well, played by Kristen Wiig. So yeah, it's all over on YouTube. If you pop in Quirky Girl on Saturday Night Live, you can. There's a number of sketches there. So Panic Pixie Scream Girl. Now, the clue's in the name, but there's a certain genre of film that you guys go for.
That's right. We are confirmed in the club horror fans.
Mm-hmm. Yes. A fine genre, and one that can tell us a lot about the human condition if you wanted to get deep.
Yeah, absolutely.
And indeed, the human boob.
Yeah, there's a lot of boobs. We tend to discuss them quite a lot.
Okay. What, jokes or actual parts of the female anatomy?
Well, so the theme of our podcast is looking at horror films through the lens of anxiety, as we are both people that suffer from anxiety and mental health conditions. Mm-hmm. So we thought that was an interesting lens, but also from the lens of feminism. Hmm. And so sometimes those boobs are feminist boobs, and other times they very much aren't.
Indeed. Okay. So things like, is it a Black Christmas and Cherry Falls and all those kind of, any particular, any, do you have any sort of slasher movie favourites that's...
I would say... the first one that we did for our podcast, probably It Follows, which is a modern sort of slasher, and it's a really interesting film.
Malcolm Monroe, yep.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah,
I'm a big giallo fan, so I really love like Dario Argento. Mm. I think Bird with a Crystal Plumage is really great, and like I love Mario Bava and stuff like that.
So these films, these are not the first films that you ever saw, though. Is it? One of the first questions you always ask people in the Emporium is, what was the first film you saw ever at the cinema? And usually it's Disney, which can be quite scary. I mean, I remember being frankly terrified as a very small child by Sleeping Beauty, and when the Wicked Queen turns into the dragon, which I think is Sleeping Beauty. And that was like, whoa, you know.
Yeah, blew my mind.
Yeah, it's strong stuff. What about you, Becky? What was the first film you remember seeing at the cinema?
So, I come from rural Wales, where there aren't cinemas. Well, there weren't cinemas in the early 80s when I was a child. So, the first proper film that I saw at cinema was Honey, I Shrunk the Kids in Hereford when I was visiting my auntie and uncle. And I was blown away by the entire experience because it was a multiplex cinema and I'd never seen anything like that.
What about you, Holly? What was the first film you remember seeing at the cinema?
Well, I mean, I'm from Bristol, so we do have cinemas. But I actually was also visiting relatives. I think I was visiting my aunt and uncle and my cousins over in Ipswich. And I think we went to see The Jungle Book.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
What was the difference between seeing it at the cinema and seeing it on TV? Because I think there is a difference. I think there's quite a different experience.
I think it was just knowing that going to the cinema was a thing, because I can't remember doing that before. So just that it was an occasion, that the watching a film was an occasion and something that you do with other people.
Mm-hmm. Like a ritual, almost like a ceremony. Yeah. I think there are very ritualistic elements in there as well. Yeah. Like it's sort of, you know, you pay your money, obviously, but you get into this sort of, you know, almost sacred space almost. And, you know, it's, everything's dark and warm and it's like, this is nice. And then, you know, it's a little bit womb-like, let's face it. So, okay, so moving on slightly. So this is the second question, I think, and this is one I ask my students as well. When I do have the privilege of teaching any film studies, and it's really interesting. I always joke that it's like, you know, psychological evaluation. But what was the film that actually lit a fire under you, that actually got you into film properly? Because you're both pretty serious fans. Obviously, you're into the horror, but you know your films and things. So what was the first film thing? My God, this was, whoa, what's going on here? And it got you into the whole screen studies in a big way.
For me, it was Goodfellas. I was deciding what I was going to do at university, and I hadn't quite decided whether I was going to do sociology or theatre or film. Those were all the things I was interested in. And I watched Goodfellas, and I remember at the end of the film going, this is what I want to do. I want to learn how to do this. I want to learn how to tell a story like this.
Oh, not like how to be a monster. Organised crime.
Yeah.
Well, I am Italian, so there is that. But I just wanted to learn how to tell a story about a world that I am so unfamiliar with. And I just fell into it and I loved every minute of it, even though it's violent and horrible. Mm-hmm. And I thought, this is for me. And so that's what drew me to study film at university.
Mm-hmm. Holly, what about your journey? What was the film that got you?
I think it was probably Sunset Boulevard. I was always like a big film fan, but more kind of, you know, just popcorn cinema. Mm-hmm. But then I did media studies A-level, but we did a kind of mini module on film noir. We did a few films, but that was particularly the one that stood out. Like both just the style, like film as art, and how everything was so kind of composed, and the drama of it as well. And also that you could make a film about films as well.
Yes, yeah, the sort of self-referential thing. Yeah, into textuality and all that. Yeah. Yes, I'm ready for my close-up now. And, I always get mixed up. Is it Norma Desmond playing Gloria Swanson, or the other way around?
The other way around, yeah.
The other way around, sorry, yeah. There you go. It's a long, long time since I've seen it. Okay, so there's Billy Wilder as well, a fine filmmaker. So we had Mel Williams, who I did a recording yesterday. She chose one of Billy Wilder's lesser-known films for the Emporium, which was Kiss Me Stupid, which I'd never heard of, and she did a great job in persuading me to take it on. So, okay, so we got the psychological evaluation out of the way. So because you're both into horror, I have to ask this, and I won't ask like for a top 10 of your favourite horror films, but what is your favourite horror film? And then this goes to Holly, I think, first of all.
I think possibly The Wicker Man. I mean,
The original one, not the dreadful Nick Cage appalling
bees,
version.
Bees, it's the bees!
mean, it's worth watching, but not because it's a good film.
Not because it's any good, yeah. Absolutely. Okay, why?
I'm a big Hammer fan, and I've explored that a lot more now, but that was probably one of the first Hammers I saw. And it's just, yeah, it's very English. I love the kind of folk horror element and the kind of weird humour that runs through it as well. Mm. I think because there's something about Hammer that's quite cosy, but then there's also some real darkness in there as well. Mm. And I like that.
Yeah. Becky, what about you?
I'd probably say The Shining.
Yes. Yeah.
It's a great film. I've watched it loads of times, and every time I watch it, there's something kind of different that I see in it. And I like that about a film.
Mm.
And it also really got me into the fact that you can watch a film that it has a book behind it,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't have to follow to be a good film. Like,
no.
Because I loved the book and I was really worried that it would be ruined. But actually I was like, no, this is brilliant. And it's not the same, but it's still mm-hmm. great.
Do you think that the book is better than the film or the other way around?
There's a question. I think you get more in the book. So sure. I guess I'd say the book, because there's more there. Mm-hmm. But it's a tough one.
Mm. I mean, I think Stephen King said it's actually his least favourite. He famously said it's his least favourite adaptation of his work, which I think is crazy, because there's been some absolutely appalling versions of Stephen King stuff over the years. Yeah, not least of which was one of his own efforts, is it Maximum Overdrive, which was, I think he said
I've not
he was
seen
pretty.
That.
No, don't bother. It's got Emilio Estevez in it. And it's not. It's during his not very good time, and it's like a demon truck, and sort of they've been taken over by some space force, and it's all a bit. Yeah, it's Do not waste 2 hours of your life on it. And I think he said afterwards, he said, I was pretty much out of my head on cocaine for most of that making that film. So it's like, okay, that does actually explain a lot. So. There we go. So writers shouldn't necessarily be, shouldn't be given the reins to do directing, I think. Okay. So the journey into film. So you got into film and you both went to university. Now, we have a mutual friend, haven't we, in Dr. Pete Falconer. And yes. Holly, was that, were you at Warwick with him?
Both of you, yeah. Where did you... Aberystwyth, Becky, you were saying?
Yeah, I went to University of Wales, Aberystwyth.
Yeah. I know Becky just through life. I used to live, she lived in my house before me with this. We were housemates of the same person, but at different times.
Yeah.
It's a small world in Bristol, isn't it?
Yeah, very.
So you're at Warwick, and you studied under the same people as Pete?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Yeah, so there's some fairly serious film academics based at Warwick. So,
well, I know that now.
Yeah.
I didn't know who they were then. I was just like, oh my God, I've got to do another essay, I guess.
Yeah. So with anyone in particular that inspired you or held your interest during your lectures? Because I've been to one of Pete's lectures, and he's a good lecturer. So was anyone that sort of kept your attention and sort of, right, we're just going to talk about feminist theory in film now.
I mean, I really enjoyed the modules I did on the Hollywood cinema. I think that was with Ed Gallifant.
Mm.
And I'm trying to think, because then, we did have some like quite famous ones, but then I can't necessarily remember if I was enthralled by the lecture. I don't know. I think I just find it all, I find it a lot of trouble concentrating in that kind of environment, and I was trying making notes which were indecipherable, and mm-hmm. I think it was a stressful time.
Okay, sure.
But I mean, Richard Dyer, because I read more famous, of this stuff later. Yeah. That's like on the stars and the musical, and that's like more. That's kind of some of my interests and stuff.
Sure. But, okay, Becky, you're at Aberystwyth, and you also. Mm-hmm. This is, by the way, for listeners, this is a coincidence, but we've actually had Michael Coven who on the show a couple of weeks ago, and that, well, I think, Becky, you actually were taught by him too.
Yes, I was.
Phil studies is a small world. So again, and this is before he went to Worcester. So anyone else at Aberystwyth that inspired you with film?
Also was taught by Professor Martin Barker. Mm-hmm. And Jamie Medhurst.
I know Martin. Oh no, maybe I don't know. Different Martin. Sorry.
There's a few Martins, yeah.
Yeah, so those were kind of the main people that were around when I was there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, so what got you into horror? Was it just like a natural kind of progression? And then also the feminist take on horror, because there's such a lot that you could, I mean, people have written a lot of stuff on feminist takes on horror. I mean, there's the famous Last Girl, etc. And obviously the just the sort of sexual politics of horror horror films can be read in any number of ways. So
shall I take this one? I mean, I've always been drawn to the macabre, and I was a big fan of kind of ghost stories and things when I was a kid. And then when I was a teenager, it was kind of the time of the, you know, slasher resurgence with like Scream and I Know What You Did Last Summer and stuff. But then I kind of more recently got into the kind of more campy end, like kind of Vincent Price and Hammer and stuff. And then it's kind of mostly for fun. Mm-hmm. But then I, through the fun campy stuff, I've now got more into being scared again, which is, I've remembered that I used to
come full circle. Okay. Becky, what about you?
So I used to love reading horror novels. I consumed them as a young person. I mainly was looked after by my grandmother as a child, and she just let me watch anything. And if I wanted to get anything out from the video shop, you remember those days?
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yes.
She would just let me get anything. So I'd be like, can you go and get me this? And I'd give her a list of things, and she'd come back with these really inappropriate things that I should definitely not have been watching.
Okay. Mainly 18s?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I used to watch them, and I loved it and really got into it. As I've got older, I've become very much into feminism and, you know, activism around feminism, which I find sometimes puts me at odds with some of the films that I really, really like. Mm. And it's quite an interesting kind of conversation with yourself about what is exploitation, what is okay, how do you feel about this? And there are things that you viewed when you were younger through a different lens, and you view it as an adult and you go, not sure about that now.
Yes, really? I mean, it's arguable that we're sort of seeing like a resurgence in sort of female-led horror films, because, and I say this because certainly something like Saint Maud, which I saw at the Watershed at the weekend, which blew me away.
Can't wait to see it.
It's amazing. There is a scene which scared the proverbial out of me, and I literally jumped back in my seat. It is this. And it was Rose Glass who wrote and directed it, her debut film, which just, I think, the fact is that this is a new filmmaker is, I think, bodes very well for the future. Very accomplished piece, really, really good. Just very, somebody who knows what they're doing with making a film. So that's great. The Babadook as well with Jennifer. Yeah. Yep. Fantastic. And you mentioned It Follows, although that was not a female woman directing. But there seems to be a foregrounding of women horror now. And there's I think there's a new one out called Relic, which is about sort of the terror of dementia mixed in with a ghost story. And it is, again, a debut by Natalie Annika Jones, I think, from Australia. And really strong sense of place and everything else. So, is this of course a celebration? I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's fantastic. There's so many female directors now, and also not in the professional space. If you start looking at kind of short stories and indie films that are being made, there's just a load of those that are being made by female directors at the moment, which is brilliant. I'm loving the foregrounding of women, but also Holly and I have talked about this. Quite a lot of films that are directed by men still foreground the women's experience within the film. So there's just an appetite to view things from a different lens. And people are obviously seeing that that isn't impacting on their sales. In some cases, it's probably bringing more audiences to films.
Hooray. So it's a win-win. Yes. Yeah, because, I mean, I don't think you could gender the sort of audience reaction to horror films, because you know, everyone likes being scared, you know, whether you're male or female and things. So yeah, it's that's not really an issue, I think. But there's, I think Hollywood still, it's very conservative industry in that it definitely pitches some films to demographics, you know, because they're, you know, polls or surveys, you know, ABC, and you know, they've still got those kind of, I think, slightly outdated, outmoded methods of marketing. So, I mean, audiences these days, I think, are really sophisticated. They know what they want. They know when they're being talked down to or condescended to. And I think filmmakers are responding to that. Would you agree or disagree?
Yeah, I think, but also that, you know, as in the past, like, so many filmmakers are also people who love films.
Yes,
you know, so they're just, you know, you can't really make a film now without kind of responding to all the kind of classics that have come before.
Yeah, there's I think the phrase is that there are no innocent texts.
No.
Yeah. And you know, the obviously The Shining was from another text. Yeah, giallo films. Are they based on existing texts, Holly, or are they more?
I think
I don't know giallo that well.
But named after a certain kind of cheap crime paperback in Italy called in a yellow cover. Mm-hmm. So that's, but I'm not sure if they were specific adaptations. It was just more that this is the film version of that kind of trashy, you know, crime paperback.
Okay. Speaking of films, let's go on to your film, because I don't know what this one is. This is a really interesting one, I think. So I love being surprised. Now, is it Phantoms of the Paradise? You gave me
Phantom
the title.
Phantom of the Paradise.
Phantom of the Paradise, my mistake. Yeah. Phantom of the Paradise. Holly, Becky, tell me about this film.
Well, it's Holly's choice. I'd never heard of it, but she made me watch it, and I really enjoyed it.
Good. Yeah, I love it. It is, I think it's 1974, Brian De Palma. It's so weird.
Really?
Okay. It's this ridiculous kind of musical.
Okay.
Rock musical. It's like mainly a version of Phantom of the Opera, but by way of Faust and Dorian Gray.
Okay,
and just a lot of campy nonsense.
Fantastic. We love it already. Okay.
Yes.
So this is I have to ask, is it horror or is it normalish film?
No, neither.
absolutely
it's
not normalish.
It's definitely not normal.
No.
It's not what you would call a traditional horror, but it has elements of horror in it. But it's more, it is more in the sort of surreal rock opera vein.
Okay. Yeah,
if you think sort of Rocky Horror, Tommy, Hedwig and the Angry Itch, that kind of thing.
So people having a fair bit of fun, because I mean, De Palma is a bit campy as a director.
You know, I mean, this is uber camp.
Yeah, it's like is the height of camp. Okay, so 74, which I think is the same year before Rocky Horror, that was 75,
yes.
But it was already a stage show, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was trying to work out which came first, or whether they were kind of contemporaries.
I think they were contemporary, but the film version built on the stage musical with Rocky Horror. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm sure, I mean, I think it was like the sort of hottest ticket in town at one point, wasn't it? Because it was held in the upstairs room of a pub initially, and then it got transferred to theatre, and then it, you know, someone thought, let's make a film of this. So they did. So what's the basic plot of Phantom of Paradise? if there is indeed a plot.
There is.
A tenuous plot.
should I try and explain?
Give it a go.
There's this music impresario called Swan, who's played by Paul Williams, who does all the music, who also did Muppet Christmas Carol.
Okay.
Insane.
Not directed by Brian De Palma.
No. God.
Would have been good if that would have been an interesting mashup.
Yeah. And he has, he's reopening his nightclub called The Paradise, and he also runs a Death Records record company. And he's looking for his big show to reopen the club. And then he meets this composer, Winslow Leach, who is kind of nerdy, but writes really lovely songs. And then he ends up like basically stealing his work, but then he kind of tries to kind of get him to work for him. But then there's stuff with a young singer called Phoenix, who is played by Jessica Harper, who's from Suspiria.
Oh.
Yeah. And oh god, I'm trying to, the notes.
So
can you take over?
I'll take over, yeah.
So complicated.
This is why we do things together. We've only got enough energy for half of it each.
Yeah.
So essentially then the Winslow Leech character becomes the Phantom. He has this accident, his face is scarred, he has to wear a breathing apparatus helmet that helps him talk. He sounds a bit like Darth Vader.
Yeah, or Bane or someone.
Yeah. And he's then haunting the, not literally haunting, but he's hiding in the backstage area, trying to ruin the show because he's annoyed that Swan has stolen his music.
Okay.
But he's also in love with Phoenix.
Phoenix, sure.
So he agrees that he will make music if only Phoenix sings his music.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Swan has other ideas and brings in a character called Beef.
Oh my god, I love Beef.
Who's played by Garrett Graham. And honestly, he is not in the film for long enough. He should have
his
own film. Yeah, he's brilliant. Mm. And then, you know, hilarity ensues.
Yeah.
Okay. So why should we like this film? What's good? What's why is it underrated or underappreciated?
I just think that the Rocky Horror comparison is interesting because the thing is, it's exactly the kind of film that I love and would love, but I only saw it like last year, and I'm just like, how did I? And I've watched Rocky Horror like 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Why haven't I seen this? This is exactly what I would like, and why isn't it as popular?
Do you think it's because there's a sort of the risk of sounding slightly pretentious and French at the same time. I think, is it Voltaire or Rousseau said, there's no power of an idea that's come at the right time, or worse to that effect. So I'm wondering if it's like a year too early, because Rocky Horror obviously took off, but Phantom of the Paradise was a year too early.
I think maybe the songs aren't catchy enough.
But the songs are great, the songs are really good.
They are really great. But I was thinking about, it's not, you know, Rocky Horror, everyone sings it. They remember all the songs. You remember all the words.
You can do the dance to the time warp.
It doesn't really have enough of that, I think, which would have cemented it in people's minds. Mm. Also, it's so surreal. Like, it's completely off the wall, that I think that disconnects it sometimes. There are some people that will really like that kind of thing and respond to it, and then there are other audiences that would just be totally turned off by that kind of film.
Sure, just a bit too weird.
I was just wondering if it was a bit confusing in the context of a Brian De Palma film as well.
You expect something from a Brian De Palma film, but I mean, this is really early on in his career as well. I mean, this is because he was Carrie was what, 76, so I think so. So that's with the very young John Travolta in it, obviously in Sissy Spacek, but again, another Stephen King. But he was just starting out, I think, in the early 70s, and I think he's still hanging out with Spielberg and Margot Kidder and Jennifer Salton, and even Martin Scorsese made an appearance over at their thing on there. In LA, they had a sort of kind of like a informal filmmakers clubhouse type thing, which
that sounds amazing.
that kind of early mid-70s time was pretty fertile. So I think it's right by the ocean, and there was I'm trying to remember from Peter Biskin's book, Easy Riders, Raging Bulls. And that he mentions the sort of whole kind of John Milius as well was a big, you know, they were friends, Paul Schrader. So there's this kind of like really like interesting kind of group of friends, directors who are sort of friendly rivals, but also, you know, made some amazing films at that time. So interesting stuff that I've never heard of this, and absolutely never would have put Brian De Palma down for doing a musical, which I think is just is wonderful. Okay, so is it campy nonsense, a lot of the sort of set pieces and things, or
it's very silly, very camp, and it's quite naff, but in the way that's sort of fun, enjoyable.
Charming Naff. Oh, we got that. Okay. Okay, so any, no one really famous in it then, apart from possibly the Giallo connection with Jessica Harper.
Well, Paul Williams, I don't know how, because didn't he do a few other, like, film, he's like a film composer mainly. That's a weird thing that he was like the main, not the main character, but the main villain in it. But he's he's himself very strange.
Yeah, he's clearly very strange.
Yeah, okay. He's just a tiny man with very straight blonde hair. He's just, he looks a bit like the little guy from ABBA.
Okay. Yes, that's true.
Bjorn or Benny?
Whoever the shorter one is, I think.
The one at the piano was Bjorn. I think Benny was the guitarist.
And he was the beard.
Hair. The beardy one was Bjorn, I think.
No, I thought that was Benny.
Sorry. Oh, I'm getting mixed up. Yeah, the one who played the piano, it was married to Anna Fried. I think that was... I think that was Benny. And Bjorn was the guitarist who was married to Agnetha.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the way it was, but... Yeah, so he looks like a guitarist, or
yes, yeah. Okay. Basically, he's not. It's the idea that he, because I really need to watch more Brian De Palma films because it's so gay. But then he's not completely. He's kind of in some ways. He's a very macho director. Absolutely. You know,
very much so. Yeah, but, almost too macho, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
he's a kind of. Yeah, definitely, definitely.
But then almost all of the kind of heterosexuality in this film is very unconvincing.
Yeah, okay. It is. Yeah, definitely.
Are they protesting too much?
Yeah, no homo.
Dare I say it? Yes, I dare. Okay, interesting. Okay. You'll be glad to know this has convinced Dr. Kino that it's going to go into the Emporium. So we will display Phantom of the Paradise in the front window for Halloween week. indeed. So yes, that's definitely in. Thank you so much, Panic Pixies. And obviously you are podcasters yourselves as well. So
yeah.
what is your next podcast? On that you're going to broadcast. When will it be broadcast?
Okay, we are telling.
Yeah, we can tell.
Yeah, go on, tell. You can tell.
Yeah, Don't Look Now. We're talking about.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, classic film. Yeah, yeah. Got one of the worst. I knew the ending was coming, and I knew that it was a shocking one. But it was like it was still really freaky.
Yeah.
It still shocks. I think it is devastating, and it's I mean, it's just a beautiful use of colour as well in that film. And this is where I think Nick Roeg is just he's got such a wonderful sense for the palettes, and just, the editing in that film is just incredible too, especially with the sex scene that's just very tender, very real.
We talk about that a lot because it was quite risque at the time. You probably wouldn't think about that now, but it's actually... probably one of the most well done and real looking sex scenes. It's absolutely lovely.
It is. It's a really beautiful moment, which kind of, when it's juxtaposed against the horror and the sort of the moodiness and the just the sort of malevolence of Venice, it's just like, an incredible film. So and you started off with It Follows, which I've not seen, but I really feel I should. I know roughly the story. I've got to say the follow-up to it, which is nothing to do with... It's a kind of horror, isn't it? Is it Under the Silver Lake?
Yeah, I've not seen it.
Yeah, and I saw it at the Cube Microplex in Bristol.
I love the Cube.
And it was... I've got to say, I think it had ideas... This is a really old-fashioned phrase, but I think it had ideas above its station. it was trying a bit too hard. I think it thought it was cleverer than it actually was. I thought it was a really good film in many ways, and it almost felt like it was trying to be a cult film.
Yeah,
like, not sure if you
try,
and you won't be a cult film. Yeah. But we'll see. Time will tell. So excellent, Holly, Becky, thank you so much indeed for making time and for coming on Dr. Kino. It's been wonderful to speak to you. And The Phantom of the Paradise is 1974, and it's directed by Brian De Palma, which I think is just it's just wonderful. Okay, so it's a sort of a surreal horror comedy campy musical. Would that be about?
Yeah.
Excellent.
That sums it up.
Marvelous. So you can pop your wings back on, and we can certainly arrange another time. I think this will not be the only discussion with the Panic Pixies and Dr. Kino.
This is true.
So if you have a discussion about the next film you'd like to dissect, then do so, and we'll be in touch very soon.
Becky, it's your choice next.
Oh yeah, excellent.
Have the cogs started turning already? Possibly, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. So, as you know, it's underrated, underappreciated, or just under the radar. That's what we're looking for. But for now, thank you so much indeed. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
And that was the Panic Pixies, Holly and Becky. And their podcast is under the title Panic Pixie Scream Girls, available now on all good streaming sites. So the film was Phantom of the Paradise, and that was 1974 by Brian De Palma. Thank you so much indeed for listening again to Dr. Kino. Enjoy your films and hear from you. We'll be here for you next time. All the best. Bye.